Thanks so much for being here. My name's Aaron. I'm one of the worship leaders here. And we are continuing in our series called Resilient, where we're just going to keep talking about what it looks like to get back up after we get knocked down. I know 2016 may have been a rough year for you. I know it was for me and my family. But the great news is that we get to start again. We get a fresh start, and we're in that right now. And another thing that we love to do at Crossroads is we love to start these services with music. And we really just view these songs as simple prayers that are set to music. And I just want you to know that whatever you believe, whoever you are, wherever you are on your journey, I believe that this is the perfect place for you to be, and we're so excited that you're here. So why don't we stand up and we're gonna jump in, and this is a lot more fun if we all sing it together, so let's do it. Thanks for being here.
Whatever pleases you will be alright. When we call to mind your outrageous faithfulness. You are with us. We will look to you, the author of our lives. We will look to you, only ever you. Whatever pleases you will be our guide, trading what we have for what will die. We will seek your face.
love hearing you guys sing. We are going to continue singing, and we're going to teach you guys a new song. And the first time that I heard this song, I was actually a little unsure if I could track with it, because it talks about God's love being fierce for us. And when I hear that word fierce, I don't always associate that with love. It kind of sounds a little bit angry, maybe a little bit aggressive. But when I look at this through the lens of being a dad, I totally understand what fierce love means. And it's because my 18-month-year-old daughter, I know that I would do anything to protect her. And I would actually, I believe that I would lay down my life if it meant that she would be okay. And paralleling that to God's fierce love for me, he actually did that. He actually laid down his life so we could be in relationship with him. And that's exactly what this song is about. So he's not angry. He wants to know us and he wants to love us. So we're going to teach you guys this chorus, and I'd love if you sing along. Sing like a tidal wave. You'll catch on.
like a hurricane that I can't escape, tearing through the atmosphere, your love is fierce.
Yes, God, I believe those things to be true about who you are. God, I believe that you love us in such a fierce and beautiful way. God, thank you for doing that. I believe it's because you desire to be in relationship with us. And God, you desire for us to be known by you. And God, you also desire for us to know you. So God, as we just continue to listen tonight, I just ask that you would just reveal yourself in just crazy fresh ways that we've never experienced before. And God, that we would just know that we are hearing from you, maybe even for the first time. Just ask all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Awesome. Thanks so much for being here, guys. Go ahead and introduce yourself to somebody around you. Tell them your name, and then go ahead and grab your seat.
Hey guys, welcome to Crossroads. My name's Matt. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Anywhere. If you're brand new, just joining us, invited by a friend, we are really glad that you're with us. We'd love to give you a little bit of context about this thing called Crossroads Anywhere, because it's sort of unique. Crossroads is kind of unique. You know, we're a church that was founded for people who had really given up on church, but hadn't given up on God. Hope that God was real and could impact their life. And as a result, now we're a church in multiple locations. Really, as a result of Crossroads Anywhere and our ability to connect online, all over the country and all over the world. And we hope to be more than just sort of like a Christian TV program that you can tune into. We want you to be able to be connected into the entire life of the church, the entire life of the team, because we don't like church to just sort of be a Christian country club. We want it to be a team of people who are all growing spiritually, moving in the same direction, and having an impact on our world. And so, you know, a lot of the things we do around here either help us to create spaces where we can grow closer to God and ask great questions, get to know other people, get in good friendships and relationships with people and do life together, or go outside of ourselves and actually impact and change and improve the neighborhoods and cities that we live in. And so I'd love to tell you about some opportunities you have coming up to get involved in all of those things. The really exciting opportunity we have to create a space for people to experience God in a crazy new way is coming in a couple of weeks, and it's our annual Super Bowl of Preaching service. We started this many, many years ago. Super Bowl is the worst attended church service weekend of the entire year, and of course, it is, right? We would all get why. And we love football around here though, so we wanted to change that. And for us, we do an epic service that's unlike anything we do all year long. It's insanely fun, and as a result, has become one of the most attended services all year. Like any good football parody event, there's a ton of trash talk. There's original Super Bowl commercials that are absolutely hilarious. There's actually some pretty inspiring teaching that happens, some great worship and music. The whole experience, you're not gonna wanna miss. We've added competitive games this year, so whether you come to a site in Ohio or Central Kentucky, or you're in your home, in your living room, wherever you're watching the Super Bowl service, you're gonna be competing, playing, learning, growing. It's gonna be awesome. And so you can go to crossroads.net/Super Bowl to learn everything about this weekend. Service times, locations, how to host a party. If you're in the Anywhere community, no matter where you live, I want you to fire up, you know, the buffalo chicken dip, put the beers in the cooler, invite people over. And if you sign up to host a party, we'll help connect people in. Just throw people in your house, help you meet new people, and help them experience Crossroads together. One of the things you're gonna see on that Super Bowl webpage is one of the locations you can go to experience Super Bowl in an epic way. It might surprise you, because that place is Columbus, Ohio. That's right, for the first time ever, we are doing a Super Bowl service big time in Columbus, Ohio. So we're downtown on Ohio State University's campus for this. You can get all kinds of information on the Super Bowl page or go to crossroads.net/Columbus to read more about what God is doing in that community and how over the course of 2017, we're investing and growing that community. It's gonna be incredibly exciting and it all kicks off with Super Bowl. So invite, invite, invite. We want anybody you know to be at that event in Columbus, Ohio. So if you've got family or friends in Columbus, if you've got, you know, a Facebook friend of an acquaintance of a person you used to work with you think might live in Columbus, get online, look them up, invite them. We want everyone there and no one to miss out on what is gonna happen over the course of this year in Columbus, Ohio. It's gonna be really great. We want people to get in relationship with each other beyond the weekend, beyond what you and I are doing now. The best way to do that around here is to get into a group. And the best time to get into a group is the journey. If you've not been a part of a journey before, it is, we do one every year, it's 6 weeks long. It's where all of us, all through Crossroads, we attend the weekend together. We have individual work that we do in the Crossroads Anywhere app, and then everybody is in a group. And we just process the things that we're learning, what God's talking to us about, the challenges that we're facing. And when we do that with other people, we grow and we make friends. Journey groups, when Leah and I first started coming to Crossroads, were the way that we met people, that we formed deep relationships, and now our best friends are people who we do journey with and have done journey with when we first came to Crossroads. This is an awesome opportunity, and we want you to lead a group. If you go to crossroads.net/groups, you can see there are hundreds and hundreds of groups out there, and yet there aren't enough groups. There aren't enough groups for all the people to get in one, and so I want you to lead one. The application process is pretty easy. You can apply online, we'll walk you through it, and then we'll give you resources and training and content and support and help. We'll take care of you throughout the whole process. If you've never done this before, this is a great time for you to take a step out of your comfort zone and experience something brand new, and through the process, create a space in your home where people can connect with other people and actually begin to belong. It's really exciting. One of the ways that we have here in May coming up, where we get to go outside of ourselves and actually impact the cities that we live in, is a thing called Go Local. It used to be called Go Cincinnati, and for years and years and years, thousands of volunteers on a single day, on May 20th, would go all over the city of Cincinnati, painting, cleaning up, building new things, doing landscaping, helping services and organizations all throughout the city. And it's an incredible event. And this year, we're taking that event everywhere, right to your backyard. That's why it's called Go Local. No matter where you live, you can participate in this and you can lead a project. So you can go to crossroads.net/go local and sign up to lead a project. You could have a project in mind, improving your street, partnering with a local orphanage down the road, or have no idea and just want to impact your neighborhood. Great, we'll help you find someone you can partner with to do that. And along the way, bring together people, serve with your group, meet new neighbors, and involve them in what Crossroads is doing. It's gonna be an incredible opportunity I don't want you to miss. And all of these things require resources to make happen, and we're excited about that, really. There's a team of people around here who fund these things because we believe God's doing some pretty big things, and personally, he's done them in our life. I know I'm excited about giving generously to these things because God's been really generous to me. And so you can go to crossroads.net/give. You can sign up to do a recurring gift or a one-time gift if you're one of those people who want to be on that team and make these things happen. And if you're brand new, no sweat. If you're just getting to know us, to trust us, we totally get that. And we're just glad you're here. There's no obligation for you to participate. While we do that though, we're gonna take a look at why Super Bowl is gonna be awesome and you're not gonna wanna miss it.
I hated God. I yelled at God, I screamed at God, I cussed at God. Everything happened in my life that was bad, it was because of God. You know, it was his fault, not mine. My fault. It was his fault. And then I moved to Fort Thomas. Had a neighbor a couple years ago start talking to me about coming to this church. And I'm like, I don't do church. I know what I'm doing. My life is great. Had all kinds of great things going for me. So I thought. And finally, Super Bowl Sunday. I just woke up that week and said, I'm gonna go. And my neighbor goes, ooh, okay, good luck. It's a crazy week. So I pull up to this college-looking place. And I, with my family, my two kids and my wife, and walk in and see a college atmosphere. So I figured, great, cool, this will be easy, this is a joke. I can walk around, smile, shake hands, go home. And then I sat down. And then the parade started and the football field and crazy service. And I laughed and I laughed. And then I don't remember the gentleman's name who did the sermon, so to speak, talked about almost losing his son. And I cried a lot. And then I laughed again. And I cried some more, and I laughed, and I laughed. We went home, and I cried some more, I laughed some more. All week long, I could think about getting back in here.
Man, it is great seeing people's lives getting touched. I can't wait for Super Bowl. Hope you're thinking already about who you're going to be inviting, because they will be thankful for you in all likelihood. And man, we're thankful to be here today, and also thankful for everyone who's at our grand opening in Richmond, Andover, or Georgetown. Welcome the Crossroads family right now. Come on now. Yes. Great to have you with us. We're continuing on a series today called Resilience. We're looking at just hanging on. Last week, we looked at this formula. A plus B equals C. Adversity plus your beliefs equals consequences, positive or negative. We've got so many people who are part of Crossroads, different walks of life. I got a communication from somebody who's a retired math teacher. I was concerned that I hadn't turned to my homework, which is why he was calling me, or contacting me. But he said, yeah, just like A plus B equals C, there's other ways to slice that equation, such as adversity. Your level of diversity will also be dictated by the consequences minus your beliefs. So if you have consequences going on in your life and you don't have the right beliefs to frame those things up and interpret and filter and understand that, you will have even more adversity because you won't learn. And that's what I don't want. I don't want anyone to have any more adversity. In fact, I want you just to be hanging on and be resilient in the midst of your adversity, or resilient in the midst of great things that are happening in your life. So before I go any further into that right now, let's just pray, okay? God, I'm honored to be able to talk about transcendent things today. I'm honored to be able to give elements of help and elements of your truth to your people. I pray that you'd use our time to move us to new places, to help us open our minds and to be different people because we had an encounter with you. And above all else, I pray that you're honored by everything that I say that's in alignment with your heart and your mind. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. Just hanging on, taking a punch, getting smacked in the mouth, and standing tall. Whenever I hear of a story of somebody who has taken adversity and then they have the right beliefs to get them through it, it's always inspiring to me, always is. One of the ones that has been around for years, but it's worth talking about again, is Admiral James Stockdale. You might remember him if you're a little older. He ran for vice president along with Ross Perot a long, long, long time ago. He was an admiral in the Navy, and he ended up getting captured, and he ended up getting tortured in a Vietnamese prison for years. In an interview with Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, or the author of the book, Good to Great, here's what Admiral Stockdale says. He says, I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event of my life, which, in retrospect, I would not trade. And then when Collins asked him who didn't make it out of Vietnam, listen to what he says. Oh, that's easy, the optimists. Oh, they were the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And Christmas would come and Christmas would go. Then they'd say, we're going to be out by Easter. And Easter would come and Easter would go. And then Thanksgiving. And then it'll be Christmas again. And they died of a broken heart. This is a very important lesson, says Stockdale. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. This is great. Love this. This is also something that is relevant for us today. Don't deny that things may be difficult. Don't deny that you got to hang on. In fact, one of the things I really hate about things is happy, clappy Christians. I don't know if you know these folks. Are like, happy, I'm always fun. Everything is good. God loves me and God loves you. Yes, he does. I love rainbows and lollipops just blowing out of my nostrils. Everything's happy. Riding pink pony. You know what I'm talking about? Like, nothing ever bad happens. Everything is, That's this kind of cheery optimism that Stockdale says, that's not the deal. It doesn't mean no matter what's happening, you have to convince yourself that everything is good and you're okay. It means that you recognize what's happening, and you stare it in the face, and you just hang on. So we're looking at Joseph throughout this series. Joseph, not of Mary and Christmas fame, but Joseph of Old Testament fame, an Old Testament hero, 12 chapters in the Bible devoted to him, very, very few. Very few people have that amount of real estate in the Bible devoted to him. And he starts off, he has this dream, crazy dream. He's this big sheaf of wheat. Here he is, and he tells his brothers, hey, here's a dream. You guys all came up and bowed down before me. Isn't that an awesome dream? It's great. They didn't like that dream at all. He repeats it to him again and his dad. They don't like it at all. In fact, they end up not liking him at all. They throw him into a pit. Then they go and retrieve him out of the pit. They throw him into slavery. He goes into slavery. And he rises up inside of a house of a guy named Potiphar, who we looked at last week. He rises up inside of there, and he does great, great things. He's a great manager, great leader. The guy's wealth grows. But his wife wants him badly, and he won't have her, so she accuses him of a sex crime. He's now a known sexual predator, even though he isn't at all. He gets thrown into jail. And he's in jail for a long, long, long time. And all he's doing throughout this time is just hanging on. And we're going to see in a bit that his ability to just hang on is actually what enables him to take off later on. You know, one of the difficulties we have with our culture right now is just how good it is. We live in a prosperous culture. I know you may not have a job right now. You might not have the job that you want. You may be tough financially, but hey, whatever you are right now, we shall admit that we live in a culture that is very prosperous. We live in a culture where we can boil water like that in 30 seconds. We live in a culture where we can store food in refrigeration. We live in a culture where we have all kinds of stuff that previous eras cultures did not have. And what happens with innovation, with prosperity, comes the shortening of distance that you wait for things. You don't wait as long to boil water. You don't wait as long to get sick because to get healthy because you have drugs that help you get healthy faster. You don't wait as long for a bunch of things. And what happens is this actually dumbs down our resiliency. It dumbs down our ability to endure to the point when we have to wait for something, we have to hang on, we just can't hang on because we want it now, like right now. You might be familiar with a test in the 70s of kids who were tested over whether or not they could withhold eating a marshmallow. This was replicated recently, and I talked about it some time ago and showed a YouTube clip on it. You can check it out if you want. Basically said to these kids, here's a marshmallow. You can eat this marshmallow right now, or you can wait 5 minutes, and we'll give you two marshmallows. So one marshmallow now, or two marshmallows if you don't eat this now, in 5 minutes. It was called an exercise in delayed gratification. Can I delay the reward? Can I delay my gratification? It's a pretty funny video. I recommend it highly. But what you probably didn't know and what I didn't learn until just recently is there was follow-up tests with those kids in the original test. And a researcher from Stanford talks about that. He seriously says, as the years rolled on and the children grew up, the researchers conducted follow-up studies and tracked each child's progress in a number of areas. What they found was surprising. The children who were willing to delay gratification and waited to receive the second marshmallow ended up having higher SAT scores, lower levels of substance abuse, lower likelihood of obesity, better responses to stress, better social skills as reported by their parents, and generally better scores in a range of other life's measures. That's amazing. That element is still at play right now. This is how God spiritually forms us. This is how he prepares us to grow. He puts us in situations where we have to hang on, where we have to wait. And the spiritual little ninny nincompoops will immediately grab what they can. And those who have some spiritual muscle and develop spiritual muscle and have increased capacity for the long term will hang on and wait and delay gratification. This is what resiliency is called. Joseph is resilient for years and years and years. Genesis 40:15 says, they continued for some time in custody. So Joseph stays for a while in jail, waiting and waiting and waiting. In fact, maybe this is part of his future success. I mean, there's 12 chapters given to him, not because he's a crackpot who had weird dreams. We haven't gotten the part where he changed the world yet. He changes the world, but first there's the resilience. First there's the time. First there's the patience. You know the best thing you can do to be patient? A lot of the series is like, I'm like saying, hey, believe this, think that, remember that. There's not a lot of tactical, practical, do this. Here's one for you. You know the best thing you can do to increase your resilience, and you can do this, you know what it is? Take a nap. Sleep. Sleep is delayed gratification for the next day. Sleep is the patience of shutting yourself down. Sleep. Science is very clear. 8-9 hours is what you need. There's some stray people who can get by in 5 or 6. You're not one of them. Everyone I talk to says, oh, I need 5 or 6. It's interesting. Everyone I talk to says I need 5 or 6, but science says over and over, like one in, I don't know, a very small percentage. Can you get by that? No. If you're not going to sleep, you're going to have less energy. You're going to have less capacity for your future. I learned this in a real practical way this last summer. I go away on the summer for a big chunk of time and just do some different things I normally can't do and just try to refuel myself. And I came back this year, and I lost some weight, and people were like, man, you lost some weight. You must have done a lot of working out over summer break. I was like, no. And I was really like, man, how would I have lost weight? I didn't get on the elliptical. I didn't do any, like, weights, dumbbells. In fact, the opposite. I stayed at a friend of mine's house who's got a really nice house down on a lake. He let me stay there for a while. And, I lifted, I guess I worked out, like, 12 ounces at a time. And he had one of these, like, slushy icy machines. I had amazing creative concoctions to pour inside of that thing. It was awesome. I mean, I ate more than I ever ate. I drank more than I ever drank. And I came home, and I lost weight. How does that happen? I thought the only thing difference was I slept. I shut my body down, and I got out of crisis mode. I got out of, like, I got to be productive, and I got to do this. And my body came alive. Burned off fat, and I came back more energetic. See, being resilient doesn't always mean you just hang in the pain. It means you just try something different. It might be that you do something that's much more patient and restful, and you patiently wait for that to catch up and be a blessing to your life later on. Number one, believe the trials grow character. All these 3 points, time goes throughout all these 3 things. We have to believe that in time, our character, our fiber is grown through trials. In the book of James, chapter 1, verse 2 to 4, it's a New Testament book, it says this: consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work. You may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So if you want to mature, you want to be complete, you want to have abundant resources, what this verse says is, hey, when you're going through a trial, when you're going through a testing time, understand, you can have a good attitude in the midst of it. If you remember that going forward, I'm going to have greater character. And our culture doesn't like trials. Our culture doesn't want to have anything that's uncomfortable with us. In fact, our culture doesn't want anybody to hear anything that's uncomfortable to them. Ah, la, 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 la. We don't want anybody to hear anything that bothers them. We just need to be, like, nice. And I'm sure you've heard of these things, you know, trigger warnings. It's happening in universities all across the country. Schools are having to be told, telling kids, trigger warning, what you're going to hear right now might be offensive to you because we can't possibly have you pay for education and hearing something you don't like. So trigger warning, get ready. You're going to have a trial that's coming here. You're going to have 3 seconds of uncomfortableness as a word is used that you don't like. I thought I'd heard it all until I heard about over in Europe at the University of Glasgow. In a religion class, they gave a trigger warning that said, hey, today's class, you don't have to come because we're going to be talking about Christianity and the crucifixion. And if an execution bothers you, you don't have to come to class today. Think about that. A religion class, you're going to say, one of the religions that's most impactful in the whole world is Christianity, but you don't have to come to learn about the central tenement of that religion, which is that Jesus stretched out his arms on a cross. He took nails. He got beaten for you and I, who deserve to be beaten for all eternity, for all of our issues that we have in our life. He took it on. And that was told that you don't have to come today if this is too much for you. One commentator says this: theology undergraduates studying an introductory Bible course at the highly regarded University of Glasgow are being warned that the execution may distress them.
They're given the opportunity to skip lectures entirely if they're too fearful that the biblical imagery may upset them. Others include veterinary students who are told that there's going to be dead mice around today. If you don't want to cut open a dead mice, don't come to class today. This is our world. This isn't a specific generation. This is our world. We live in a world where if I have any trial of anything I don't like, anything that's told me that's information I don't like, I'll find somebody else to counteract that information because I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to be scared. And therefore, we never have any character that's formed. And when something smacks us in the mouth, we've got nothing to keep us standing up. We can't recover because our beliefs can't fully filter through the consequences of our current adversity. Number two, believe that turbulence increases capacity. You have to believe that turbulence increases capacity. Turbulence is resistance, right? So if you're lifting weights, you're putting turbulence or resistance on your muscles and you're increasing the capacity of your muscles. If you get huffing and puffing when you walk upstairs, what do? You create your own turbulence by running and creating wind coming against you, and that increases your capacity to walk up multiple flights of stairs without actually falling down. And spiritually, this is the way it works as well. God brings us things that blow in our face and almost blow us down, but in the process, our capacity, our heart grows larger, our spiritual fiber grows larger. We see this with Joseph. The very first time he has a dream, we see his character growing because he's a little jerk who's kind of full of himself. He tells everybody, come and hear this dream that I have dreamed. It's all about him and his dream. It's all about me. Come hear this dream I've dreamed in Genesis 37:6. Then when he goes to prison, he has a couple people who are trying to give him dreams and they want them interpreted. So he says this in Genesis 40, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me. Just tell them to me. Come on, I mean, they belong to God. You may as well tell them to me because we're like side by side here. Tell them to God, tell them to me. Same thing because I got a straight line to him. Just tell them to me. You can see that he's sort of full of himself. And this is maybe why he has some of the consequences and some of the adversity that's happening in his life. Later on, when he goes to Pharaoh, which I'm going to tell you in just a moment, he says to Pharaoh, hey, this dream, it's not in me, but God will give you the answer. You see his spiritual progression? Because he's been waiting, because he's been in a poopy field, because he's been having just stuff thrown at him, he goes from the self-centered, look at my dreams, and he starts to grow, and he has capacities where he's leaning in on God, giving God credit and God glory. So one of the people he interprets the dream for is a cupbearer. The cupbearer goes off, and the cupbearer goes to Pharaoh, and when he goes off to Pharaoh, he leaves Joseph with him. Joseph stays in prison for another 2 years. And let me tell you something. Prison in Egypt, in the BC era, prison was a hellhole. There was no like nonprofits that are trying to raise money for prisons. There was no rehabilitation. This is called dungeon. There's no like, hey, let's try to help somebody make a helpful contribution to society when their time is done. No, this is a hellhole, and he's sitting in this for another 2 years after he's interpreted a specific dream. This is awful. This is difficult. This is not like some of the conditions that prisoners who are part of Crossroads are a part of, though any prison is not a good condition, but at least in the prisons in our, which by the way, prisons are in our state. You realize that right now, there is 4 Crossroads locations that are happening in 4 prisons in the state of Ohio with 300 people attending every week. Welcome our Crossroads family and the prisons that are in the Ohio system. So good that you're part of us. You're an equal part of us. It is awesome. It's an honor to be with you in ministry. It really is. Now, those folks, we have things that we're doing to try to hopefully rehabilitate them, bring them to a new place. Probably not enough. I don't know how helpful it is or not, but I think all of us at least understand, yeah, we ought to do what we can for prisoners, and we do this, and then that was not the case back then. Joseph feels utterly abandoned. You could not have a worse 2-year existence than being in a dungeon in Egypt, alone and forsaken by your God. Pharaoh hears that there is this guy down in this prison who might be able to help him out. He ends up going for Joseph, and because Joseph has had time, this time has softened his heart, given him clarity to where he's able to say, hey, it's not about God. It's not about me. It's about God. Time does a lot, doesn't it? I've been married for 28 years, and you know, it's interesting that the, by the way, some people say that marriage can be a hellhole. I tend to decline that assessment because marriage is awesome. I am like so pro-marriage, you can't even imagine. It's awesome, awesome, awesome. And the greatest thing about marriage is the longer it goes, the better it gets. And one of the reasons why the better it gets is 28 years in, you learn something through the turbulence of the earlier years. You learn something through the tension of the earlier years. So Lib and I fight way, way less than we used to. When we do fight, they are bad. It's like we have this pent-up fighting and it comes out. But we fight very, very rarely. And one of the reasons we do is because you just get wiser. So when you're 1 year married, you would say, why are you doing that? And now you go, you say nothing. You don't say it saves a whole argument. You just learn. So like, why would I have said that 26 years ago? You start to see how things are going to go. You go, okay, if I say this, you're going to say that. So I'm just not going to say this. And this helps you to have a deeper relationship. By the way, when you're 28 years in, also the reason why it's better is because you've had 28 years of turbulence. You've had 28 years to build character with being with each other, because it's in the hard parts of relationships where growth happens. It's in the difficulties where you're just hanging on. When your spouse has told you something that you thought before, I would have divorced you if you told me that, but now I'm just going to hang on and try to figure this out. And after that, you are better. It's in the beautiful hard times. When everything in your life, the hard time in college where you are, the hard time in your job, the hard time wherever it is, it's in those times when you're getting grown. You get grown during finals. You don't get grown during spring break. We don't like it in the moment, but it's good for us. We need that difficulty. By the way, speaking of difficulty, we're intentionally going to have some difficulty at something I want to announce right now. Couples Camp. Couples Camp is coming to Crossroads March 31st. We've had Man Camp. We've had Woman Camp. Couples Camp is coming. It's going to be awesome. Yes, it's going to be difficult. You're going to have to be hiking in with your spouse. Yes, it won't all be difficult. You may have sex in a tent. That's up to you and your spouse. All kinds of things are going to happen. But I'll tell you what, it's not couples resort experience, because you don't grow as much as a resort as you do if you're challenged together, if you're outside of your comfort zone together, if you're pushed with one another. And through that, the beautiful and the powerful things of life end up taking off. Now, Hebrews 12:11 says this: no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. No difficulty, no tension, no turbulence. When we're in the moment, we like it. But later on, we're really thankful for it. This is a problem with all Americans in every age group in our country. And as I said a number of weeks ago, oftentimes it's the younger age group that is just a mirror to all of the other age groups in our country. And I saw something recently that Simon Sinek said about the millennial generation. I think you'll enjoy it.
Now you add in the sense of impatience, right? They've grown up in a world of instant gratification. You want to buy something, you go on Amazon, it arrives the next day. You want to watch a movie? Log on and watch a movie. You don't check movie times. You want to watch a TV show? Binge. You don't even have to wait week to week to week, right? I know people who skip seasons just so they can binge at the end of the season. Right? Instant gratification. You want to go on a date? You don't even have to learn how to be like, hey. You don't even have to learn and practice that skill. You don't have to be the uncomfortable one who says yes when you mean no and says no when you mean no and yes when you... You don't have to swipe right. Bang, I'm a stud. Right? You don't even have to learn the social coping mechanisms. Right? Everything you want, you can have instantaneously. Everything you want, instant gratification. Except job satisfaction and strength of relationships, there ain't no app for that. They are slow, meandering, uncomfortable, messy processes. And so I keep meeting these wonderful, fantastic, idealistic, hardworking, smart kids. They've just graduated school. They're in their entry-level job. And I sit down with them and I go, how's it going? They go, I think I'm going to quit. I'm like, why? They're like, I'm not making an impact. I'm like, you've been here 8 months. You know? It's as if they're standing at the foot of a mountain and they have this abstract concept called impact that they want to have in the world, which is the summit. What they don't see is the mountain. I don't care if you go up the mountain quickly or slowly, but there's still a mountain. And so what this young generation needs to learn is patience. That some things that really, really matter, like love, or job fulfillment, joy, love of life, self-confidence, a skill set, any of these things, all of these things take time. Sometimes you can expedite pieces of it, but the overall journey is arduous and long and difficult. And if you don't ask for help and learn that skill set, you will fall off the mountain. Or you will, the worst case scenario, and we're already seeing it, the worst case scenario is we're seeing an increase in suicide rates. We're seeing an increase in this generation. We're seeing an increase in accidental deaths due to drug overdoses. We're seeing more and more kids drop out of school or take leaves of absence due to depression. Unheard of. This is really bad. The best case scenario, those are all bad cases, right? The best case scenario is you'll have an entire population growing up and going through life and just never really finding joy. They'll never really find deep, deep fulfillment in work or in life. They'll just waft through life and it'll be just, it's fine. How's your job? It's fine, the same as yesterday. How's your relationship? It's fine. Like that's the best case scenario.
That verse I read earlier, count it all joy when you encounter many trials. This is one of the ways you count it joy, is you realize this trial, this tension, this turbulence of just hanging on. If I can look forward to the future, this is in some way going to equip me for something later and to understand God later. It's the story of one person at Crossroads who was generous enough to share with me her story. Here's what she says. The year of 2004 was a living hell. I was a single mother of three teenage sons, 17, 15, 13, working full-time as a special educator and drama director. On March 16th, I was in a head-on collision and miraculously survived the wreckage of a completely crushed plastic Saturn with only minor back issues. On April 1st, my brother was arrested for sexually assaulting my 15-year-old son over a period of 5 years and pandering videos of him doing this online. On May 5th, the car that a Christian family purchased for me caught fire and caught our house on fire. On May 28th, my brother was sentenced to 135 years in prison. On June 10th, my 40th birthday, I just purchased a used BMW with insurance money from the accident on March 16th. I pulled out of the lot, and within a mile, I was hit head-on again. The outcome of every one of those trials served a godly purpose. I met a husband in 2004 because of all this madness. God never, ever leaves you. Miracles still happen. I love to say that my life has been easier since 2004, but it has only presented new heartaches. My father's passing and horrifically losing my stepdaughter to a heroin overdose, 2015. After searching for many years for a church home, God led us to Crossroads on April 2016. My husband, who was not a Christian, accepted Christ that first day. My dreams have come true by being in Awaited, that's a Christmas show that we do, sending my husband off to man camp and serving those who need to know where my joy comes from. God has used my trials to give me peace that surpasses understanding, joy that fills my heart and overflows into everyone I meet, love that is unconditional, wisdom to intervene, and a story to uplift those going through hell. Isn't that good? That's somebody whose character is grown because of the tension and the turbulence of what they're dealing with. Now, Pharaoh has this dream. It's this really weird dream. Like the kind of dream that you would have if you had stale pizza and flat beer. It like makes no sense. It's like he sees these like skinny emaciated cows coming up out of the river, and these itty-bitty skinny cows are eating seven other big, huge, healthy cows. And this freaks him out. He wakes up like, I don't think that was just the pizza last night. I think there's something happening in the spiritual realm here. And he says, who can help me? And all of his sort of spiritual gurus around him, no one can help him understand what this is. And there's one guy in the room, the cupbearer, who drinks the cup, making sure there's no poison in it. I was like, that job. Who had a dream interpreted by a guy in prison in the hellhole where he was 2 years earlier, and it dawns, like, ding, I know a guy. Pharaoh, I know a guy who, like, nailed my dream and nailed another guy's dream. I mean, he's really good. You might want to look into it. I said, okay, fine, we'll do it. He goes down, he sends for him, he brings him up, and has him cleaned, has him scrubbed down, has him shaved, all that kind of stuff. And you think that Joseph might be excited about this. Like, ooh, it's my time. I get to be with the most powerful person in the history of the world. Egypt. Like, boom. The leader would be the Pharaoh of Egypt. But think about this from Joseph's perspective. His experience with dreams is not good. First time he talks about a dream, his family disowns him. Second time he talks about a dream, interprets dreams in a prison, everybody forgets about him. He's lost family, he's lost years, he's been in prison, he's been forgotten, he's been alone, and the only through line through all those things is dreams. It's the only through line. And now, the most powerful person who could really jack him up, he has a dream. And Joseph's like, I have to think, Joseph. I got to think he's getting weary here. He's hanging on, but this guy could really do him harm. So he hears the dream. He says, all right, here's the deal. 7 big, huge, fat cows. That's because the next 7 years are going to be gangbusters up and to the right. Everything in Egypt's going to be up and to the right. GPD, earnings, grain, it's going to be amazing 7 year run. And then you're going to have 7 years of utter famine, and that famine is going to decimate all your 7 years of earnings. It's going to decimate and wipe out everything that you've done going forward. That's the answer. Pharaoh hears this and he realizes, that's right. And Pharaoh goes, who can oversee this? Because this is going to take some real, real planning. Now, he had to have done some research on Joseph before he'd come up out of prison. And he had to have learned that, okay, I got a guy come before me who's got a history with dreams and the supernatural. I got a guy coming up before me who, before that, worked with another senior official in Egypt. And he rose up through the ranks. His name is Potiphar. And he ended up running his entire estate. And everyone knew something was crazy about that estate because it kept making money. This guy knows how to manage things. And then, bam, Joseph tags him with the most spiritually intriguing experience of Pharaoh's life. And Pharaoh says, you know what? I think you're the guy. I need you to be my COO. I need you to take the 7 years and make it happen for the future. And so that's exactly what Joseph does. He becomes second in command over all Egypt for the most part, overseeing their whole future. Their entire future is based on him. So what he does, he takes these 7 years, and every year they set aside a fifth. So whatever we're making, guys, whatever we're making, we want 20%. We're going to sort up. And he starts creating cities that are just warehousing grain. Like today, we're all freaked out about grain, like gluten-free. Hey, just have some freaking wheat and stop freaking out about it. You know, we're like, I can't have any bread. Like the whole human race and all of history has always had bread. We're like, oh, can't have bread. Yes, you can. Now, Brian, it's organic. Now, and that was, no, it's not organic bread any longer. Okay, whatever. So all I'm trying to say is, like bread, if you didn't have bread, you were done. The whole world economy and everybody's survival always depended on grain. And so after 7 years, they've got these whole cities that are set aside just holding grain, and famine hits, bam. But Egypt's okay. They got grain. But guess who isn't okay? All of the neighboring nations. So they start coming to Pharaoh in order to cut a deal. Actually, they start coming to Joseph to cut a deal. And so they're trading anything. They're trading land. They're trading cattle. They're trading gold. And so as this happens, I mean, Egypt's wealth and Pharaoh's wealth just keeps going up. It keeps climbing ever higher and ever higher. The third big idea. You have to believe the tension creates clarity. I have to believe that while Joseph was having the tension where he was, there was something about spiritual clarity that was coming to him. This is what happens in your organization, in your business, or in your own family. Scarcity always creates clarity. The tension of scarcity always creates clarity, where you realize, I don't have that much money, and you realize, okay, what do I have to spend this money on? I got to be really clear, because scarcity is telling me this is really what I'm about. And I believe that Joseph had such scarcity for years and years and years. He lived in that tension. And the time for just God to simmer him and sift to him, that it gave him a clarity, a spiritual clarity for a moment like this. And in this moment, the neighboring nations start coming around. And guess who's in the neighboring nations? His brothers. His brothers have sold him into slavery. His dad, who was upset, who's now thinks he's dead, by the way, but his brothers know that they've sold him, and he must have died. He's long, years and years and years and years have gone on. And let's take a look at what happens. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. I don't even know if Joseph remembered that first dream that got him in trouble. I don't know if he remembers it. It says he remembered there. So remember the dream? Big thing of wheat, there's me, you come bow down to me, right? So here he is now, he's all painted up like an Egyptian, he's kind of walking like an Egyptian, whatever he's doing, he's there, and they can't recognize, they think he's dead, he's changed over time. And so they see the guy they got to cut a deal with, the second most powerful person in the whole world, and when they do that guy, when they see him, they go. Joseph remembers the dream. Then you think he remembers the dream, he's like, oh my gosh, this is it. See, here's the thing. God gives us dreams, and we have visions for the future, but they're really incomplete. That's why you have to be resilient and hang on. We think that we understand what our future is, but we really don't. We're just operating with what we know in that moment. It hasn't been flushed out through difficulty. It hasn't been flushed out through tension. It hasn't been flushed out through time. And as time and tension does its work on your life over the next weeks, months, years, or decades, what happens is the dream doesn't necessarily change, but your interpretation and understanding and application of the dream changes. Joseph could have never seen this dream that he was going to be an Egyptian official. That he was going to be running the world economy? That his brothers would have to come to him in order to be able to live and put bread in their own stomachs? Let me tell you something. If you have a dream, do not forget that dream. And also don't hold so closely to the interpretation of that dream that you can't be open to new possibilities. This is the beauty of Joseph's story. The dream was real. The dream happened. Things went forward, and so did Joseph. So, that tension you're in right now, it may not be that life sucks. It might be that God has you in your hand and he's working you for the dream. That time that's going on and on and on, it might only be that God knows you're not ready for it. I remember when I left Pittsburgh. When I leave Pittsburgh to come to Cincinnati was, I walked out of a job performance review with my previous senior pastor / boss, and he kind of told me how my performance was, and it was good. I mean, I was doing okay. And I walked out of that restaurant. I can remember like it was yesterday. It was Jay Clark's in Wexford, Pennsylvania. I walked out of that restaurant, and I sensed very clearly God put on my heart, says, You need to not ever do one of these again. You need to never do another job performance evaluation here, because if you're here again, my interpretation of that dream or that sense that I got from God was, because if you're here again, you will have wasted time of your life. You need to get out of the nest. You need to go stretch yourself. You need to try try gifts. You try your skills. You need to be in a different arena. So I went out of that, and man, I answered every ad I could. Every ad I could. I networked everybody I could. I was sending letters to churches saying, hey, you want someone to plant a church out of your church? You need help with a teaching pastor. I went to my denomination and sister denominations, got all the things I could, and I went and interviewed a place all the way out in California. I thought we were going to be going there, and we ended up, they said no to us and did somebody else. We thought, oh, you got that wrong, because we felt God was saying this was the place. We were like really rocked out of that. And then at the very end, there was only one place that would have us. You. One place. One place that happened. It was 11 people. 11 people said, we've got enough savings to maybe help you with your salary for a year, and we'll go for it, and then if we don't, then we're done. We said, okay, great. It was just hanging on for a long, long time, waiting for not the right opportunity, an opportunity. An opportunity. Of course, who would have ever thought that Crossroads would be what it was right now? We may have had a dream that we articulated 20 years ago before that, but what has happened here is nothing at all what it was before. Not in opposition, but it's just been flushed out. This way it is with you. Don't feel like you are so certain about your future that as soon as something isn't going your way, then something is wrong. No, something might not be going your way because God's trying to still show you the way. Something might be difficult because God's trying to increase your muscle mass. He's trying to increase your spiritual intensity. He's trying to increase your clarity. He's trying to increase your certainty. Don't forget the dream. Hang on and allow time and the formation of God to be your friend. God, I thank you for your presence in our lives and the ancient and powerful story of Joseph. I know there's dreams inside of earshot, inside of eyesight of everybody who's experienced this today. God, I know that none of us fully understands your dream for our life. Help us to hang on and be resilient a little longer until it comes into focus. I pray these things according to your name, Jesus. Amen.
Hey guys, great to be with you this weekend. It was great to be together. We're going to continue our resilience series next week, so make sure you're back here and bring some folks with you. And I want you to get involved beyond the weekend. The best way for you to do that and really get engaged is to actually lead a group this journey season. So go to crossroads.net/groups and start the application process this week. Have a great week.